Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Howdy, I am Steve Abramowitz. You can hear the Tennessee allergies in my throat, and this is the Mill Creek View podcast. We're focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. Sounds terrible in my ears. Hopefully you can get through this with me, folks. Welcome to our People in News, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with special guest Summer Lane. Summer Lane is the number one best-selling author of more than 25 hit books, including the wildly popular Collapse series and newly launched Resurrection series featuring spunky militia heroine Cassidy Hart. Summer is also the creator of these best-selling titles, Unbreakable Seal, S-E-A-L, Sea, Air, and Land, The Zero Trilogy, The Bravo Saga, Collapse, The Illustrated Guide, Running with Wolves, Historical Thriller, Vigilante, and Prolific Writing a Hit Novel, and the smash hit novels of the Collapse series and Resurrection series on Amazon, which featured spunky wartime heroine Lieutenant Cassidy Hart and sold over 100,000 copies and counting. Summer owns Writing Bell Publishing, a management company, and Writing Bell, an online magazine. She's an accomplished journalist and experienced writing instructor. She began her career as a freelance journalist when she was just a teen. Summer works as a producer and editor at the Counterculture Mom Show, editorial writer, and offers commentary on policies and politics through the lens of womanhood and biblical theology. Associate editor, Right Side Broadcasting Network, RSBN. Your number one source for live event coverage. Summer is known for her rapid fire and engaging style of reporting and editorial work. Summer lives in Central California with her husband, daughter, and two lovable German shepherds. Hi, Miss Lane. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you. I hope you're doing well too.
I feel great. I sound terrible. You're going to have to do a lot of the talking, and that's what this is all about. So I'm okay with that. Well, that was a lot of jobs in your bio. How do you get it all done in a day?
Well, I don't get it all done in a day. It's just a slow process. You know, I get up real early. I start my day at 6 a.m. I start working early, and typically I don't finish working until late at night. It's not about getting it all done. It's about finding your stopping point, sleeping, and then going on to the next day. That's kind of how I've always lived my life. It's just, you know, keeping moving and keeping working on stuff all the time. I'm not happy unless I'm working on something. So I'm very much a project-oriented person.
Well, that's the only way you're going to get all that done. So that sounds like a pretty good strategy. I lived on the West Coast for many, many years working on the East Coast. So 6 a.m. to me was really 9 a.m.
Exactly. So I get it. Yeah, exactly. That's why I get up so early, because I'm trying to follow the news, you know, and in order to do that, you got to get up so early in California to figure out what's happening in Washington, D.C., you know?
Gosh, yeah. The hardest part sounds like daughter and two dogs. Is she old enough to have read your books yet?
No, she's only 5 years old, so she's just learning how to read right now, but I do read to her all the time, although I haven't read to her my books quite yet, because they're a little bit above her target market age range, but one of these days, we will definitely be reading them together.
Nice. Well, it's a nice legacy to leave. Lifestyle Magazine said about you, you'd never guess the demure smile, soft voice, which you're hearing right now, and kind eyes that belong to Summer Lane, would be the genius behind a series of military apocalypse novels. So you probably get this question a lot, but how do you research military details? You know, like Tom Clancy had access to classified info. Do you have clearance?
I don't have clearance, but I grew up in a law enforcement family. My dad had a SWAT team, and my dad also went to Iraq a couple of times in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And so I grew up surrounded by that sort of tactical mindset, if you will. And I definitely am like my dad in that way. I think I just like to get things done. And I've always been fascinated by the military and police. And I thought many times about going into law enforcement myself or doing something along those lines. But I found that God had gifted me more with communication. And so I have a passion for that, but I use my gift for communication to tell stories that are sort of situated in that sort of genre. My grandpa was also in the Navy for 20 years, and just a lot of military and sort of law enforcement richness in my family. So I have a deep appreciation for it. And because of that, I know a lot of people who have worked in law enforcement and have been in the military. So when I first started writing my original series, which was the Collapse series, I was basically doing my own research all the time. I was doing interviews. I was sending my manuscripts off to people who had been in like special forces or whatever and saying, hey, read through my manuscript. Tell me what doesn't sound real to you. And then if it doesn't sound real, tell me how you would do it. I want this to sound real. And so I also studied a lot about the Revolutionary War because a lot of the fictional world that I wove together in the Collapse series is heavily based upon the militia warfighting style of the Revolutionary War. And I just kind of brought it into a more of a dystopian post-apocalyptic setting. So understanding how they used to fight too, just very fascinating to me. I like action. I love survival. So research for me really came through just the people that I knew and just really immersing myself into understanding that. Even though I myself have not been in the military, I just have a deep appreciation for it and I admire it very much. And so it seemed fitting that I would choose to write a book that was sort of, action oriented like that also.
That is very cool. Well, if is your father still with us? Can you thank him for his service for us? Yes,
Yes.
okay, good.
Yes.
What's your favorite book of your characters that you've created?
Oh, my favorite book.
Yeah.
Probably the final book was my favorite one to write, State of Hope. That it was the final one in the initial first 10 book series. That was a really fun book to write. It was the culmination of 10 books worth of research and really hard work and research. And it was very emotional. I actually cried when I wrote the last chapters because I felt like I was going on this journey with these characters. And so I was like crying. I was like, what is wrong with me? So that was hard to do, but it was also really fun. I'd say definitely the last installment of that first series was probably my favorite to write.
Okay. Will there be movies or series coming out soon now that they're
I
done?
that would be cool. I used to talk to people about that back in the day, but I will say I'm pretty protective of my work. I don't just want to give it away to anybody because it's my books. I feel like I'm trying to tell a story that's appropriate for like teenagers and junior high readers, and also like adults can read it too and enjoy it. But it's also a clean series, that like I keep it clean enough so everybody can read it and enjoy it. And so it would really be hard for me to, give it to a studio and watch them turn it into maybe something that I never wanted it to be in the first place. So it's important for me to maintain my integrity in the story. So it would have to be the right person, the right studio, that kind of thing. So right now they're just staying books, but things could always change.
That's true. And just don't give it to Disney or Netflix. Right here in Tennessee, we are trying to create the heartland movie making capital of the universe. So maybe your movies are more that type of patriotic, wholesome story than the Disney stuff. Someone on Amazon going by Kelly S gave you 5 stars. Congratulations. The Collapse series, she said, or he said, excels at unexpected plot twists and uninterrupted action that keep the story interesting and the reader engaged. Miss Lane's effortless writing style connects the reader to the characters, unlike any other series I have read, so much so that by book 10, I really felt like I was a part of their story too. That's the highest praise for a series. When you do book tours and signings, is it always such positive response?
I'd say yeah, it's mostly positive. Every once in a while you get somebody who says something to you, but who cares? I'd say it's like 99% positive feedback. I've had people email me over the years that were just it was so touching. People say things like, "Oh, I was injured. I had a surgery, and I was really down. I sat down. I read your books, and they gave me hope. They gave me something to do." And it really is meaningful. Writing to me is not. It's not about, having the movie made or making the money. It's about telling a story that people connect with and making art because it is my art form. I can't paint a picture, but I can paint a picture in your mind with words. And I just love that. That brings me a lot of joy. So, yeah, I just Writing is my passion. I've been doing it for a long time, and I am extremely grateful to all of the people that have ever read my books, left reviews for me, emailed me, reached out to me. I wouldn't be here doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for them. So I'm so grateful for any support and all support that I continue to have in my writing.
That's great. And I used to always say that, Tom Clancy was phenomenal at his technical expertise in the books, but he couldn't write a love story to save his life. I mean, all the characters never really were fleshed out. So you're the opposite. So good job doing that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that would be, I would say I'm probably the opposite. The technical details I sprinkle in, but I'm more focused on the character development and the underlying plot points. And that is probably, I'm a woman writing the story, so my perspective is different than what Tom Clancy's would be. And at the time that I was writing Cassidy's story, I was one of very few people maybe who had tried to tell this type of military post-apocalyptic thriller from the viewpoint of a young woman. That was just not, I mean, this is a long time ago, and Kindle and all that kind of stuff was just kicking off. And so I was like kind of out there on my own on a little island. And now a lot of people write a different, all kinds of post-apocalyptic stuff and survival thrillers on Kindle. But at the time, I was one of the earlier ones. And so it was just kind of a unique thing. And so my brand really became Summerlane and Cassidy Hart were kind of synonymous with each other.
Yeah, it's like The Road, only from the female perspective, instead of
Yeah.
having the wife walk out into the dark and never be seen again.
Yes.
What are your book plans for the future? Do you have a long-term calendar schedule for all these stories we can look forward to, or?
Well, I paused my release schedule because I'm working on politics right now. I'm covering the presidential campaign of Donald Trump primarily. That's what I'm doing. But I am working on a book that I would like to get out. I'm actually working on two books. I've actually written 30 books. So I decided to take a little break while I was working on the campaign trail, essentially. I'm not working on the campaign trail literally, but my goal is to do everything I can personally as a writer to get to 2024, November 2024, and then see what happens. And then maybe I can get another fiction book out there because that is my first love is fiction writing. I love to write a good story. Just nothing, there's nothing like it. So I would love to get back to that steady schedule. I used to release I think at one point I was doing like three or four books a year. That was a little crazy. It was a little nuts. So I don't do that anymore, but that doesn't mean I couldn't go back to doing that.
That'd
So
be it.
we'll have to see. We'll have to see what God has in store for me. I don't know.
Well, after the election, you'll have 4 years to twiddle your thumbs. You might as well do some books, sick
Yeah,
buddies.
we'll see how it goes, right? If we're here and we're all still standing and World War III hasn't started, maybe.
Well, they can read your books as informational manuals, I
That's
suppose.
right.
So your character, Cassidy Hart, she's a girl boss. She is. One of those small, demure characters, like they said about you. Do you ever watch those Disney movies like Black Widow or Tomb Raider, where the 105-pound girl kicks butt on the 220-pound special forces trained fighter killer? Because movies are fantasy. Any thoughts on fight someone your own size, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I know that. And that was very important to me with Cassidy's story is when she wins, she has to win in a believable way. She can't win in a hand fight with a 300-pound sumo wrestler when she's only 5'2". That's not going to happen. So how can we make it believable? You have to look at the strengths of what a woman can bring to the table in relation to a man. And we know that men and women are different, and men pretty much have the upper hand when it comes to like a fist fight. So in the book, she fights in different ways. She's a sniper. That's her strongest asset is she's a dead shot. And so believable a woman can do that, right? And just she's fast, she's quick, she's smart, she's good with strategy, she's a good leader. And then she can lean kind of on the muscle of the men who are around her to get things done. And so it's more of that believable common sense, strategic forward thinking rather than just saying, I am 100 pounds and I'm just going to punch you in the nose and you're going to fall down. We all know that's not believable. And it was important for me not to go down that road. So yeah, that's kind of my approach, trying to make it as believable as possible.
Yeah. Well, good job, because that's not usually in the other stories. It's a little bit of, especially when you see a girl get beat up by a guy and come back for more. That's I don't like that series,
No, because
that
it's
visual.
not believable. Yeah, it's not believable. It takes you out of the story. Anything that's not believable and pulls you out of the story is a deterrent, and it shouldn't be there. So that's
Right.
what we're always trying to, or at least I'm always trying to avoid those little things. I don't want people to ever stop and go, that doesn't sound right. I don't want that.
Yeah. Plus, I was raised that a boy should not hit a girl. So to see it on the screen as, bring it on like Rocky II. No, I don't want
Right.
that. Not
No.
that that happens in Rocky II, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Bravo series, prolific young author keeps the hits coming. The Fresno Bee said that. What made it motivate you to write those?
Well, I love dogs. When I was thinking about, my future career when I was a teenager, the thing that I would have loved to do is be a canine handler. That was like, I was very fascinated with that. But of course, I didn't actually go into that field. So I thought, why not write about it and, and talk to people who have done it. And I have, obviously, I have German Shepherd at home. So I talked to a canine handler. I learned a lot about the psychology of the mind of a dog and different types of dog training. And then I wrote this book basically from the perspective of this dog who is a marine bomb sniffing dog who gets separated from his handler in the same apocalyptic universe that Cassidy Hart's story takes place. So they all of these stories and novellas and separate series at some point they all intersect. Because I kind of liken it to the Marvel universe. We have all of these different stories and they all kind of come together at the end. And was is it Endgame or Infinity War, whatever the last movie is? That's kind of how my books are. They all at one point, all these characters intersect because they're all in the same universe. So Bravo eventually crosses paths with Cassidy Hart, but he has his own story. He pops up in with another character in another series, which would be the Zero Trilogy, with his new handler. But it was really fun writing that series because I'd never written a book from the perspective of a dog, and I thought this is crazy. But it was actually really fun. It was really fun. It was really different, and it really challenged me as a writer to think about the world from the perspective of a totally different type of character.
86%, 4 and 5 stars. So you're doing something right on that one. On the Kindle, reader said, no name attached. Sorry. I can say that each book I read by Summer Lane is my new favorite. I absolutely love the story of Bravo. She nailed it again. So if it was crazy at the beginning, you did something really well. All right, switching gears a little bit. Writing Bell is a website dedicated to exploring fiction and nonfiction. It's also a space for intellectual, social, and theological commentary from a biblical worldview. Tell us about that.
Okay, so Writing Bell, was my magazine. I called it an online magazine. I ran that for many years and I did tons of interviews with authors, like lit agents, artists, whoever. And I would interview them about their craft and I would kind of point people to their work. And that was how I got to know so many people in the industry. And a couple of years ago, I actually took Writing Bell's landing page and I redirect that now to a new website, which is my Substack. It's called Write Revolution News. That's where that links into. And now I do interviews with, right now at least, I do interviews with, like, I'll do political candidates, somebody who's running, maybe trying to make a change. And I do news summaries, I do editorials where I comment on culture. Sometimes I'll write about theology issues if I'm interested in it, if it kind of ties into women's issues a little bit, because I love writing about women's issues from a common sense perspective, as I like to say, nothing too crazy. So that's kind of Writing Bell started as a magazine for creative talent that I kind of put together, and then it sort of morphed into this portfolio, if you will, of my editorial work that I do now, interspersed with some of my articles that I still work on. And that's all my personal stuff.
That's the Right Revolution on Substack. And if all that wasn't enough, but wait, there's more. RSBN, you write op-eds in support of Donald Trump. Have you had any blowback on your novels because of your support for Trump, like J.K. Rowling had for being outspoken that a man can't get pregnant type of thing?
No, I mean, some people are upset about it, I guess, but I don't care. So I think after dealing, you deal with on a small level, in fiction, you deal with people, giving you a negative review or saying something to you that's really unkind, or you say you get bad press. I don't know. I dealt with that, working through that kind of a world for years. And so when I jumped over into politics, I had to make that decision. Do I care what people are going to say about me? Do I care what people think about me? The answer is I do not care. Because you have to do what's right no matter what. And doing what's right is not comfortable. It's not fun. I've definitely lost things because of what I'm doing. I've lost opportunities, friendships, relationships. People do not understand. But I am in this to save the country. I love my country. I love the fact that as a writer, I've been able to have the freedom of creative expression, and I don't want to see that go away. So, I mean, you get hate here and now again. Who cares? Because they're just words, empty words out in the universe somewhere. So it doesn't bother me at all.
And so you're supporting the candidate who had 4 years, zero wars versus the current situation where we think we're in five or six. And if, for those on Rumble, you can see you have Trump hats hanging from back there and pictures of Trump. I guess you're trying to stave off that apocalyptic world that Cassidy has to live in with the
Yes.
dog Bravo.
Yes, and that's what's so funny is years before Trump ever came on the scene, I was writing about in that fiction book kind of things that I could see happening to our country, and one of them is a foreign invasion, the internal weakening of our economy, all of these sorts of things that we see happening right now. I was writing about back then from this fictional perspective, and unfortunately, it's all coming true. And so, what happened to me is when Trump left office, I was extremely distraught, like I think a lot of people were. And I thought, what's coming is not good. We are going to have war. We are going to have unrest. We're going to have economic problems. It's going to be bad. And sure enough, we can, like, the world's on fire. Everything's on fire. And so I became very passionate about we have to fix this, or my child has no future in this country and there's nowhere to go. Like, where are we going to go be free? There's nowhere left. So I just pivoted over in politics, and I support Trump because I think he's the best man for the job right now. And I think it's funny too because I always considered myself to be what I would call a liberal conservative. And I think what I meant by that was that I was just kind of a moderate. I'm very egalitarian. Everybody needs an equal shot, but from there, you got to kind of duke it out in the free market, that kind of a thing. That's sort of my perspective. If you want to live your life that way, that's fine. It's a free country. Just don't come over here and tell me what to do, that kind of a thing. And so Trump appeals to me because he's kind of he represents common sense American values. And he understands business. I understand business. I'm not a billionaire, clearly, but I understand
Bankruptcy
why
plan.
he does certain things because he's thinking about that business perspective, how to keep things running, how to keep things moving, get in, get out, get it done. I think he even says that in his book, The Art of the Deal, get in, get it done fast, and then get out. I think that's kind of his mindset. And I just really admire that because that's something that resonates with me because I'm a project-oriented person. I work hard. I like to get in, get the job done, release the book, get out, do the publicity, get in, get out. So it makes sense to me. And I really believe that he will restore peace very quickly. And that's very important to me, establishing peace on the world stage and bringing back the economy so that way our youngest generation coming up has a chance to own a home, maybe not have to work three jobs to make ends meet. This is not the economy or the world that the older generation grew up in. I hear a lot from that, if you don't mind me using the word boomer generation. They'll be like, oh, these young kids today, they just need to suck it up. I'm like, these kids today are screwed. You've got kids working. I know I have friends working three jobs. They cannot make ends meet and they're working really hard. It is not the same world that our parents grew up in. And so it's time for us to take it back. It's time for us to take it back. Trump gets it. He's a businessman. He's gonna, fire the engine of the American economy back up right away. He's gonna establish peace. And all of these problems that are completely fabricated and totally fake are gonna go away immediately when he gets in the White House. And we know that's true. because he did it before and he'll do it again. Not that I'm passionate or anything,
No, that you got your talking points down.
but.
One of your recent op-eds jumped out at me. There's a lot, so I can't go through all of them in this show, but this one. There have been so many legal attacks on Trump since he announced his 2024 re-election campaign that it seems incredible, impossible even, that the 45th president has been able to keep his head in the game ahead of the November general election. As the country gets ready to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ this coming Easter weekend, this weekend, the story of a savior's triumphant victory over darkness and death is perhaps a fitting time for America as a nation to hold firmly to truth, justice, and work toward the sweet possibility of a future victory for freedom. Do you think Trump will win and they'll let him get into office?
Do I think he will win? Yes. Are they going to let him get into office? Guess we're going to see. It's very interesting. Last time, what happened, in my opinion, was just a crime against humanity. I obviously have my own opinions about what happened in the 2020 election, but this time, I think we're building a better machine with which to do battle against the Democrat machine. And one of them is rebuilding the Republican National Committee, putting Laura Trump in there, putting Chris LaCivita in there, putting Michael Whatley in there in order to actually utilize the power of the RNC to protect the integrity of our elections, to do legal ballot harvesting, as you've heard Laura Trump say probably. These are things that we were not doing in 2020. And Ron McDaniel certainly wasn't going to do any of that. So it's good that she's gone. The adults need to come into the room and they need to use the RNC because the Democrats are brilliant. They make more money than the Republicans do. They're aggressive. They go after what they want. They get what they want and they stay mission focused. And Republicans tend to squabble within themselves endlessly. And therefore, we're weak. We don't get anything done. So it's time to take the Donald Trump approach and look at this as if it was a business. How can we make it successful? What's our end goal? How can we achieve that end goal? You go into the battle to win, not to lose. So that's why I'm excited to see the RNC turn around right now. And I do think that he will win, but I think it's going to be a hard work every single step of the way for all of us who are doing what we can do in different ways, whether we're on the campaign, whether we're spending all day writing about what's going on, like I'm doing, trying to get the message out there so people know, what's going on, what the agenda is, what Trump is actually saying, not what, the mainstream media is saying. How can we clarify that? I just feel like I spend my days providing a press perspective rebuttal of the mainstream media, if you will. Like they'll say, like, for example, we had the bloodbath hoax last week, I think it was. I'm sure you saw that. They took his comments way out of context. And so I'm like, well, I guess I better write about what he really said, because I want people to understand just how evil and twisted the forces are out there who will say anything, do anything to keep him from getting back into office. And I am very passionate about just trying to tell the truth. Not even a perspective, but the objective truth. This is what he said. Now you can decide for yourself. I'm just so sick of the lies,
Tell us about your access to Trump. How did it come about in the beginning? And is there a side of him that the public doesn't know that you know you'd be comfortable sharing with my listeners?
Well, Trump is a very kind man. He's a very generous man, and I think people would be surprised at how kind he really is. I think the media paints him out to be this very caricature version, the sort of bombastic New York real estate guy. And certainly, he has had a very glamorous lifestyle, and he's a showman, if you will. And if you read his books, especially The Art of the Deal, he really explains how he works with the press and utilizes the press in order to get, publicity and to help his business deals. And of course, I'm sure he takes that strategy into politics as well. He's just a very kind man, and I've had the privilege of meeting him also, and he was so kind. I was very blown away at just what a nice, soft-spoken person he was. And I cannot say enough about his integrity, and just his compassion for the country. He loves the country. That is another thing that I wish people would understand is he loves the country so much that he's willing to put himself through this garbage. And you can't help but respect him for that, even if you don't agree with everything that he has to say, even if you don't like his personality, you can't help but respect the guy for fighting because nobody else has the guts to do it, you know?
Oh no, he's been through the ringer a couple times for sure. And it just cost him what, $175 million. So yeah, it's blood,
crazy.
Sweat, and tears.
Yes.
RSBN, they host the Michael Savage show. I've listened to him since the 90s, maybe his very first radio show out of San Francisco in my Bay Area days. I give him a lot of credit for Trump's win in 2016, with him getting his focus on the border language culture. Savage Nation, that's what the book was about. He and Rush made me interested in radio in general. Do you get to interact with Michael Savage?
No, I'm on the editorial side over at RSBN, so I'm not doing any of the broadcast stuff. But that's interesting that you bring up the border, because Trump often brings up in his speeches how back in 2016, people were generally telling him, like, don't talk about the border, don't talk about the border. Well, he really brought that up and brought it to people's attention. And everyone made fun of him for it. And they're like, oh, build the wall. What a dumb thing to say. Well, nobody's laughing now, you know, and you look at what's happening with the border. I think Trump has said there could be up to 18 million people that have crossed over the border illegally by the time Biden's hopefully one term is over in 2025. That's a lot of people. And of course, we know statistics and Border Patrol is reporting that most of these people are Chinese nationals, Haitian nationals. They're coming from Yemen. They're coming from Syria. They're coming from the Congo. You know, they're coming from Iran. Something is not right here. And a lot of them are single military aged men. Something is not right.
Prisons of Venezuela. Yeah.
Venezuela, exactly. So there's something very insidious going on here. I think we all kind of know what it is. And Trump was going to stop that, I think, from ever happening. And man, they just went full send once they got him out. And they literally just took any shred of border security that we had and threw it in the trash can, opened up the gates, and now they're replacing us. So I'm really excited to see Trump get back in, but it is going to be interesting to see how you even fix when you have that many people coming in. Like, how do you even get them out? I don't know. So
maybe what Eisenhower had to do on the factor of 10, but I'm very curious to see what happens after April 12th, in about 3 weeks from now, when the census is over and all those people's benefits dry up. What are they going to do? Are they going to go back home? Are they going to turn to crime? Whatever, because the Democrats are not going to care about them anymore. And they're not just a head count, because the census doesn't care about citizens. It cares about actual people in all those sanctuary cities, so that they don't lose congressional seats, because 300,000 people have left California.
Yeah.
But the net inflow keeps them powerful in DC. So it's kind of sick. But so as we wind this down here, what's your take on the publishing business? I got reports out of Breadloaf years ago. I'm sure you know what that is. Maybe everyone else doesn't, but it's okay that it was all DEI, woke, pornographic for kids, you know, DRAC. And sure enough, that's what the big guys that bought Penguin Classics, et cetera, pumped out.
Yeah.
On Boy, and this book is gay for teens, and it ends up in school libraries.
Yeah.
How do you compete in that environment with your biblical values and your wholesome teen content?
Well, I think the beauty of it is that I don't have to try to compete, because I'm in a totally different zone. You know, I find that people are much more inclined to read something that's not pornographic than to read something that's pornographic. Certainly, the market pushes that on us. But I think there's something to be said for standing apart from that, because that in itself is a brand. That in itself draws attention to your product without even having to say anything. The industry has certainly changed. That is true. It's I like having the creative control over my own books. That's why I started my own publishing company. I didn't want to foist that control over to somebody who was going to tell me, oh, hey, you know, this is a great book, but you need to add X, Y, and Z element here, or we're going to drop you. That doesn't work for me. I know what my readers want, and I know what will sell. And so I don't want to sit there and, you know, argue about stupid stuff like that. It's just not an efficient way to do business. It is sad to see what the publishing industry has become, in my opinion. I walk through the young adult section quite frequently at the bookstore, and I am shocked at some of the content in there. It is not for teens. It's for adults, and it's very graphic, and it's been a pretty rapid escalation too, especially when you look at what's in the elementary elementary fiction novels. Like I go through there and I look for books for my child to read, and I'm like, what is this? Like, this is not appropriate for a child, at least in my opinion, to be reading. So I think
Some of it's not appropriate for adults, as a matter of fact.
it's
I mean,
not adult.
there's a perversion there for sure.
Yeah, no, a lot of this stuff is not appropriate. And so I think that the flip side and the bright side, perhaps, is that because the industry, like Hollywood, like music, like publishing now, has gone so far this way that it opens up a business opportunity for us to do something more classic, more clean, more traditional. And people are so oversaturated and they're so shocked all the time with this, shock culture that we have, that they're looking for an alternative. And so it actually, I think, is good for someone like me. And I don't have to try to swim against the current because I'm over here doing my own thing. And I don't have to worry about competing with that nonsense because it's not what I'm here to do. I'm just here to tell a good story,
That's great that you could do that. I'm assuming Scholastic doesn't have you in there, or some of the mainstream ones that try to pump it out now. But you're young, not going to say how old you are, but being America First and pro-Trump, it's very countercultural these days. That was my point. As is being married and a mom, they call you a birthing person who actually did it, had a birth. How have you persevered over your peers by maintaining your steadfast patriotism and been willing to keep writing about it? Is it really just the audience that you created keeps coming back for more, or has there been some industry assistance? Putting your name on it, it's a big deal.
Well, for me right now, it's about mission focus. I consider myself a patriot. I love my country. I will use my writing skill set to do what I have to do to tell the truth. And that's what I'm committed to. But I also just love to write. So you put me in a room and you say, here, write this. I'll be like, sure, let's go. I'm so excited to do that. I love to communicate. It's really fun to me. It's my passion. It's my art form. I said that earlier. I think it can be discouraging sometimes when you have, friends or whatever who are like, oh, you shouldn't be political, or it's so lame to be political. And I'm like, look, this isn't about politics. This is about right versus wrong. This is about saving the country. And I just want to be remembered for someone who did the right thing and not for sticking my head in the sand and going, oh, la, 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 I hope it'll all pass and go away. I want my daughter to have the example of it's okay to stand up and say the right thing, and to also use the skill sets that God has given you to help your community and to help your country. It's not all about me. It's about, the country as a whole and our children and the next generation. So I think the mission, that's what keeps me going, thinking about the future and what's at stake. So that's what keeps me going right now. That coupled with my love for writing is just a match made in heaven, I guess.
Yeah, I saw you somewhere wrote you were inspired by Patrick Henry. Good news to have. He said in 1775, I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace, but there is no peace. If life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery, forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. How's
Yes.
that sit with you?
Words to live by. For years, I had that speech on my wall, and I would look at that and that would inspire me. Give me liberty or give me death. I think that is fantastic. I think that is how we should live our life. The founding fathers are my heroes. These are deep intellectual thinkers, and wealthy men, most of them wealthy landowners, kind of like Trump, wealthy guy, didn't have to do this, but decided to do the right thing for the country, and I think that might be why I like Trump too. He kind of reminds me of that, sort of that mindset. Let's do something. Let's give back to our country. Let's protect our country, and let's be patriots, and let's keep the fires of liberty burning for the next generation. There's nothing that inspires me more than that. And Patrick Henry is just, yeah, he's one of my greatest heroes.
Right. Well, Summer Lane, thank you for your time. We are at the end here, so please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you, and if you have social media, how they can follow you.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been really nice. You can find me on Truth Social, on Twitter, which is now X, and Instagram, all under the same handle, which is at Summer Ellen Lane. Summer Ellen Lane, LANE, all the same name all across the board. And you can also find me, you can find my editorials that I write about Trump at rsbnetwork.com. I just look up Right Side Broadcasting Network. You'll see everything over there. And then I have my own Substack called the Right Revolution News, where I do America First news bulletins and editorials, as well different sorts of editorials than I do for RSBN. And you can find that at summerlane.substack.com.
Very cool. Well, keep doing what you're doing. You're great. And I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hi, this is Tina Tobin, and I'm with Tennessee Liberty Network, and you're listening to the Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast. Southside soul, whiskey whispering low, little sweet nothing southernism, Jack and seven sipping, hoping that you're digging on me, talking
Tennessee. All right, talking a little something besides Tennessee. With a hoarse voice, but that's okay. Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show. Hopefully by next week, that is all back to normal. Producer Steve, what do you think of our guest, Summer Lane?
Oh, I'm a little envious. I'm a writer, and I'm rewriting my book, actually, as...
She's got 30. Know. What's taking you so long? You got to hurry up.
What is taking me... I'm going to be publishing my own... I'm going to create my own publishing company as well and take total charge... Just like you're doing with your media platform that you're doing, you're taking total control over it. And that way, we have the freedom to do what we want to do and promote those that we want to promote and not be told, you can't talk about that or you can't bring those people on because it doesn't fit within our profile. And so I love the fact that she's done that. She's found a niche. And that's very important, as you know, Steve, trying to build a show, trying to produce movies, and publish books. You need to find a niche, and then once you find it, you can keep feeding into it. And sounds like she's done that with two successful series of books, and I think that's a wonderful thing. And just as a segue, I love the idea of her creating her own world where she can introduce different characters within that world going on and doing their own things, but if she wants to, she can bring them together.
Yeah,
and that reminds me of the old 70s TV crime dramas, like Cannon was out there, and then all of a sudden Barnaby Jones shows up, and he's another, and they had a couple crossovers because they were in the same town. They're both detectives operating differently, but they got to do a couple crossovers, and I thought that was really cool, but it was produced by Quinn Martin Productions. And so they saw the value of introducing new characters, new shows from doing that. And we've seen that on other shows too. But I like that because now she's free to continue to explore many other people and situations.
Yeah, she's creating a universe. It's very cool. And a good one. All right. We'll see if I can get through this. It's starting to get a little squeaky now. But you have the clip, hopefully. Richard Nixon.
Is that from yesterday?
Yeah, we'll go with this.
Uh-oh. Okay, you talk and I'll find it.
All right, so Richard Nixon, 1913 to 1994, he was the 37th U.S. president, best remembered as the only president ever to resign from office. All right, so Nixon's most celebrated achievement as president were nuclear arms control agreements with the Soviet Union and the diplomatic opening to China. Set the stage for the arms reduction pacts and careful diplomacy that brought about the end of the Cold War.
Say goodbye to that costly cable TV once and for all.
That's the commercial part. Likewise, the Nixon doctrine of furnishing aid to allies while expecting them to provide the soldiers to fight in their own defense paved the way for the Reagan doctrine of supporting proxy armies and the Weinberger doctrine of sending, that's Caspar Weinberger doctrine of sending U.S. armed forces into combat only as a last resort when vital national interests are at stake and objectives clearly defined. But even these groundbreaking achievements must be considered within the context of Nixon's political goals. He privately viewed the strategic arms limitation talks and the China initiative as a way to blunt criticism from the political left. And while the slow withdrawal from Vietnam appeared to be a practical application of the Nixon doctrine, his secretly recorded White House tapes revealed that he expected South Vietnam to collapse after he brought American troops home and prolonged the war to postpone the collapse until after his re-election in 1972.
You want me to play it now?
Yeah, go for it, and I'll tell you why.
But when asked what his final message to the nation would have been, he said this.
I would warn against the media elitist complex. You know, the media is always talking about the imperial presidency, the power of the imperial presidency. I think we ought to hear a little bit of discussion of the imperial media and its power. You see, presidential power is limited, limited by the courts, limited by the Congress. The media's power is unlimited. They can tell an untruth, print an untruth, which some of them consciously do, if it's going to sell newspapers or what have you, or win a prize.
Since the days of the revolution, scrappy working class reporters use their pens to
That's
give
it.
A voice.
That's all
to
we
them.
Need.
Boy, so, a lot of truth in that one.
Yeah, I was thinking about Nixon, our most scandalous president, when I was looking at our current president as he finishes up his first four-year term. I found this article and I wanted to share it, if I can. I think I need AI to actually read this. But Biden is left seething, outraged, and cursing when confronted with reality over re-election polls, report Chris Enlow, conservativereview.com. President Joe Biden is not happy with his re-election hopes, that his re-election hopes appear slim. Sorry. NBC News reported on a January meeting between Biden and his allies in which he was informed that his polling in Michigan and Georgia, two critical battleground states, was dropping over his handling of the war between Israel and Hamas. Both states, large population of Middle Eastern refugees, or immigrants, I should say. Sources who spoke to NBC News said Biden was seething during that meeting and even began to shout and swear. One of Biden's central problems from his perspective is that he feels constrained by his aides. Oh, yeah, that's it. Let Biden be Biden, like they used to say. Let Ronnie be Ronnie, as in Reagan. Joe is no Reagan, man. I wish they would actually, he won't win a single state in November. Back to the story. Moreover, Biden is questioning in private whether he should trust his aides, who are primarily concerned with politics, or his own instincts, formed through his experience spanning more than a half century. Biden is probably a little mad at himself for not being more forceful with his staff, one person told NBC News. Unbeknownst to Biden, the problem isn't that Americans are receiving his campaign messages about the direction of America and his argument that his policies are the solution to a better future. The problem is that Americans don't believe it. That's why Biden's job approval rating is more than 15 points underwater in a dangerous territory where one-term presidents reside. A significant majority of Americans believe the country is headed in the wrong direction, and they not only do not believe Biden that will turn it around, but they believe he is the reason it's headed in the wrong direction in the first place. Yep. Here's another similar story in another left-wing paper, this time Axios, of all places. Obama would be jealous how Biden's rivalry with ex-boss shapes his presidency. Funny, vying for who is worst of our 45 ever. Yes, we've had 45. I double-checked. By Alex Thompson, Axios. President Biden doesn't speak frequently with Barack Obama, but behind closed doors, he talks about him a lot. Why it matters, Biden often measures himself against the man he served as vice president, current and former aides say. It's a complex relationship in which there is a rivalry, particularly on Biden's side. Obama would be jealous, Biden sometimes says, when speaking about perceived accomplishments, according to two Biden aides familiar with such instances. The competitive dynamics has informed Biden's approach to several issues, including how he's dealt with Afghanistan, Israel, and Congress. Reality check. On a personal level, the Biden-Obama relationship is respectful and even affectionate. Obama often praised Biden publicly and is set to be a key surrogate on the campaign trail this fall to help Biden get reelected. Driving the news, Biden's range of feelings about Obama is apparent in the recently released transcript of Biden's interview with special counsel Robert Hur, who investigated Biden's handling of classified documents. Unprompted, Biden told Hur about the wounding experience of Obama favoring Hillary Clinton over him to be the Democratic presidential nomination in 2016. Biden recalled that a lot of people were encouraging me to run in this period except the president. He just thought that Clinton had a better shot of winning the presidency than I did. Biden privately has told aides that he believed he could have beaten Donald Trump if he had run in 2016. Especially early in his presidency, Biden paid extra attention to cultivating relationships with members of Congress, something he thought Obama should have done more. Biden told her that as vice president, he often had lawmakers over for breakfast just to get their take on matters, and that he'd push Obama to make a similar approach. With President Obama, I would always say to him, Mr. President, all politics is personal. People close to Biden's White House cheered when Senator John Tester, that's a Democrat from Montana, told a reporter in early 2021 that Biden was the first president to host him in the Oval Office, even though Tester had been in the Senate all 8 years of Obama's presidency. Some former Obama aides had scoffed at the possibility that Republicans would work with a Democratic president, and Biden took pride in passing his bipartisan legislation on infrastructure and industrial policy. Yeah, right. One former Biden administration official noted that there's a little bit of right back at you attitude with Biden. You know, picking up the phone and calling senators does work, actually. Like Obama, Biden had big legislative wins in his first 2 years with the support of Congress, but far less success after Republicans took control of the House 2 years into his term. Thank God. Former President Donald Trump alleged on Monday that President Joe Biden is behind every single one of the lawfare attacks against him and that all the cases he's embroiled in amount to election interference that will ultimately have the reverse effect. President Trump made the remark during a press conference at the Trump Building in New York on March 25th after a court agreed to pause collection of the $464 million judgment against him if he puts up a $175 million within 10 days. The former president hailed the ruling, saying at the presser that he would very quickly post a cash bond securities to cover the $175 million. If he does put up the money, it will prevent the state from seizing his assets while he appeals the judgment. President Trump earlier attacked the alleged lawfare action of President Biden and his team, questioning whether they had crossed the legal line. At what point are the actions of a sitting president using lawfare against his opponent for purposes of election interference considered illegal? President Trump wrote in a post on Truth Social. I believe, as do various highly respected legal scholars, that crooked Joe Biden has long since crossed over that very sacred threshold, he added. That's our political climate in 2024, folks. Makes you really excited to want to get out there and vote for a candidate, huh?
Which Biden? Which Biden are you talking about?
Whichever he has to say. Yeah, I know. Stay tuned for my thoughts of the month.
Hi, I'm Will Hewitt with Tennessee Taking Action, and you're listening to the Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast. It's Tennessee whiskey.
That's supposed to be replaced, folks.
Oh, it will be.
Time for my quotes for the day. Before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify or iTunes, search for Heartland Journal, and hit the subscribe button. I really hope you like it. And you can join the conversation at Heartland Journal on Twitter and Facebook anytime. No A in journal because Twitter won't allow enough letters. So at Heartland, JOURNL. I know it's weird, but once you're subscribed, you're good. Alaska was the cure for the disease of my despair. Summer Lane. Grief is like an ocean. It comes in waves. Some waves are bigger than others and you cannot prepare for it. Summer Lane. Despite everything, every piece of Alaska sang to me. I remembered every curve in the trails, every tree in the forest. It was familiar to me, comfortable. The more I thought about leaving it, the less I liked the idea. This was my home. Summer Lane. We'll fight, I interrupt. And if we die, that's how it ends. Fighting with purpose. Summer Lane. That's it for this episode. Thank you, Summer Lane, for, as the Fresno Bee said, at a glance, you'd never guess the demure smile, soft voice, and kind eyes that belong to Summer Lane would be the genius behind a series of military apocalypse novels. Well, y'all, 193 awesome and amazing episodes as the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with always an interesting guest as advertised. And next week, we change the name to Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast. Don't lose us. So subscribe on Rumble and Podomatic, Spotify and the like, and you won't miss a single episode. I've seen the upcoming lineup, and trust me when I tell you, you don't want to miss any. Same host, same promise of always a great guest making a positive change. The occasional live music from an event I go to in Music City and anywhere else, and a speech I deliver, and appearances on other people's shows like Fault Lines out of DC and Final Countdown and the Alan Nathan Show, Wake Up Memphis, Matt Murphy Show. Just no more print newspaper in Washington. That's it. And instead, a brand new website and daily newsletter right to your inbox at heartlandjournal.com, like Wall Street Journal, only everywhere else. Check it out and please subscribe. I hope you still like it. This is goodbye for the Mill Creek View. This is hello for the Heartland Journal. I'm your host, Steve Abramowitz, former editor-in-chief of mcview.us and now editor-in-chief of heartlandjournal.com. See y'all in April. Peace in our time, and no matter where I'm doing it from, glory to God.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.